This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. I've got another 60 minutes of old-time radio drama for you this week, beginning with Big Town. We'll hear The Deadly Summons, their story from March 22, 1949. After that, it's The Screen Director's Playhouse and The Exile, their story from January 23, 1949.
Extra Big Town, hero about it, player gets deadly summoned. Extra Big Town, extra!
Goodbye, Craig. I'll be back in an hour, and I don't want to find you in the...
Illustrated Press.
Yes, who's calling?
I want you and your editor, Steve Wilson, to witness a summons.
What kind of summons?
Thou hast all seasons for thine own, O Death.
Yes, listen to this strange and exciting Big Town story of a nearly perfect crime brought to you by Lever Brothers Company, makers of Life Boy Health Soap. Another headline story of fighting editor Steve Wilson on the Illustrated Press, whose newspaper creed stands for freedom and justice against the forces of intolerance and evil.
The power and the freedom of the press is a flaming sword. That it may be a faithful servant of all the people, use it justly, hold it high, guard it well.
Now, Big Town and Steve Wilson's strange and gripping story of The Deadly Summons. So live that when thy summons comes... Such is the poetic admonition behind tonight's headline story of murder that began as young Whit Blake returned home from the funeral of his mother to confront his stepfather, Gregory Kane, with the terrible suspicions of murder.
So you're still here in my mother's house, are you, Kane?
How could I leave? Confined to this chair for the rest of my life.
I wonder if you really are.
Now, my boy. I know your mother's death has been a terrible shock, Whit. Come here, son.
Don't call me son. I'm no son of yours.
All right. But I am now your guardian. We are bound together by the terms of your mother's will. And we might as well make the best of it.
Couldn't you have waited a few days to go into that?
Life must go on. The play must go on. We are but actors.
Oh, shut up, you hammy Hamlet.
I was your mother's leading man.
That was the one horrible mistake in her life. The mistake that cost her life.
Poetic fancy, my boy.
I am not your boy. No flesh of your blood, no part of your warped and twisted mind.
Oh, but a boy, nevertheless. A boy trying to live up to your namesakes, Whittier and Blake. Ha! A boy living in an unreal world of poetry, fancy, and music.
Yes. And suspicion. Suspicion.
Keep away from that electric organ.
Why? Are you afraid the sweet, gentle ghost of my mother will come back from her chamber in the silent halls of death?
Can't you speak without stealing, plagiarizing the words of your infernal poets?
They are ought to be quoted, not to yellow in uncut pages or gathered dust, not to die as we must die.
Stop talking about death. Stop playing that organ or I'll smash it with his cane.
Oh, yes, that loaded cane. It's heavy enough to kill a man or a woman. Why do you keep it near you always when you say you can't get out of that chair? Even to go to pay your last respects to my mother, who gave you everything in life and half of all she had in death.
You're crazy. I was afraid the shock would be too much for your milk and water poetic mind. Now stop it or I'll have you put away.
Where? Where, my dear stepfather?
Committed to an asylum. You're insane.
Perhaps. Who knows? Is it better to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune? Or by opposing end them? To sleep? To die? Perchance to dream? Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come?
Stop it, I tell you.
Tell me, as an actor, how did you play Hamlet, my dear stepfather? Feigning madness or really mad.
Shut up. Get out of this house and stay out, or I'll have you committed tomorrow.
No. Because I have a strange feeling there isn't going to be any tomorrow for one or perhaps both of us.
Don't you threaten me. Get out or I'll ring for the servants and have you thrown out.
Go ahead and ring. There are no servants in the house.
What's that?
You heard me. I gave them the night off. I wanted to be alone with you, my dear stepfather.
Stop that, please. Get out of here or I'll brain you with this cane.
Be careful. Don't get out of that chair or you'll betray your guilt.
You know I can't get out of this chair. The doctor's cleared me of any suspicion in your mother's death.
Oh, yes. But there are more things on earth than are dreamed of in doctor's testimony, to paraphrase Mr. Shakespeare, or Bacon, if you wish.
Stop that. Stop quoting. Stop playing, or so help me.
Yes, so help you. But now the stage is set. And we must have an audience, an impartial observer, to measure the madness that crouches in the shadows of this room like a hungry beast.
What do you think you're going to do?
I'm going to phone a newspaper woman I met at Mother's funeral to come and witness a deadly summons from the grave for one of us.
Always for you, my lovely. Come in.
Thanks.
Where have you been?
I've been to a funeral and digging in our morgue file on the deceased.
Whose funeral and what did you find?
The rather surprising death of one of our first ladies of the theater.
Oh, Elizabeth Blake. Oh, yes. Fell down a flight of stairs in her townhouse.
Uh-huh. And that strikes me as rather odd.
How so, Laura? Lots of people are killed by accidental falls.
But Elizabeth Blake was an actress, trained, if necessary, to fall down flights of stairs without hurting herself.
Acting and actuality aren't always the same, Laura. What else has aroused your repertorial suspicion?
What her son, Whittier Blake, said as he knelt beside his mother's grave.
What did he say?
He quoted from one of Shakespeare's plays, Hamlet, I think, said, "Murder will out, though it hath no tongue to speak."
Murder?
Yes.
But there was no suspicion of foul play, Lorelei. Not even a coroner's inquest.
I know, Steve, and the boy looked rather wild and haggard and acted a little crazy when I tried to question him
later.
What did
he say?
Well, he just flung quotations at me about retribution and a summons from the grave.
Well, what did you get out of the morgue file?
Plenty of stuff about his mother's stage career, but not much about her private life since her second marriage to an ex-actor named Gregory Kane.
Gregory Kane, was he at the funeral?
No, Steve, he's paralyzed. He stayed at the family townhouse. Young Blake hates him, and I think there's going to be more to this now that Kane will be his guardian.
Well, it might be worth looking into, following up.
Young Blake said I might have a chance soon.
Yeah, just a minute. Steve Wilson, Illustrated Press.
Good evening, Mr. Wilson. I'm told by your operator that a certain young lady, reporter by the name of Lorelei Kilburn, is at present in your office.
Yes, she is. Who's calling, please?
Simply say, we met at my mother's grave.
Oh. Just a moment. Lorelei.
Who is it, Steve?
It's Whittier Blake.
Oh?
You may have a chance to follow up that murder lead sooner than you thought.
Oh, yes.
Here, take the phone.
Thanks. Hello?
Are you still curious about my strange behavior at my mother's funeral, Miss Kilburn?
More than just curious, Mr. Blake.
Good. Could you come to my mother's house immediately, tonight?
Yes, I could be there in 10 minutes. Why?
I want you and your editor, Steve Wilson, to be witnesses.
Witnesses to what?
A summons, Miss Kilburn.
What kind of summons?
Leaves have their time to fall, and flowers to wither at the north wind's breath, and stars to set. But oh, thou hast all seasons for thine own. O death.
Steve, he hung up.
What did you get?
An invitation in poetic double talk to witness a summons to be served by death.
Good grief. That kind of summons calls for two witnesses. Get your so-called hat, Lorelei. Let's go.
Thus, Steve and Lorelei are drawn into a strange and deadly saga of hatred and revenge. And for the exciting developments, we'll return to Big Town in a moment. Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner.
And the cleaner you get your skin, the surer you are of being fresh and attractive. So remember, Lifebuoy, with its purifying ingredient, gets skin cleaner. stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. Here's what the doctors proved in 820 scientific tests.
People took daily baths with different soaps. Doctors found that Lifebuoy does more than just remove the grime and perspiration you can see. Lifebuoy's purifying ingredient makes it more effective than any other leading soap against the invisible dirt that brings on B.O.
Lifebuoy's milder, too. Safe even for babies' tender skin.
And you'll like the way Lifebuoy, made with costly coconut oil, bursts into quick white lather, even in hard water.
Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner. Keeps you fresh and attractive. Protects you as no other leading soap can. Bathe with Lifebuoy every day. Get the big new bath size. Buy Lifebuoy right away. Now back to Big Town and tonight's dramatic story of the deadly summons. Accepting a strange invitation to witness a summons of death, Steve and Lorelei arrive at the townhouse of a well-known actress who has died after a mysterious fall. And the door is opened by her son, an intense young man whose mind is tormented by the conviction that his mother was murdered.
Good evening, Miss Kilburn. I see you've brought your friend.
Yes, Mr. Blake. My boss, Steve Wilson, editor of the press.
Come in, Mr. Wilson. I've read of you in connection with the smashing of some rackets.
Yes, I've been able to help the police break up a few.
Good. You'll feel quite at home in this house of hate. And the hounds of jealousy strain at the leash.
Mr. Blake, could you give us the facts in plain English?
Yes, where is your stepfather?
Upstairs. My mother's music room. Chained in his chair by his own folly. Dreaming of tomorrow when he'll have me put away in a place of the living dead. As surely as my mother died upon those stairs. And awaits retribution to strike her slayer down.
Now, wait a minute, Blake. Don't let your poetic fancy run away with your common sense. How could your stepfather be responsible for your mother's fall down those stairs if he's paralyzed and can't move out of his chair?
I do not know. But I know he did. And I shall prove it.
Surely you're not suggesting the doctors are wrong, that he isn't paralyzed.
No. He cannot walk. He cannot move out of that chair without help. Nor can he move the chair. But by some devil's device, he made my mother die.
Why should he want your mother to die?
Jealousy of her fame. Envy of her fortune. Bitterness over his failure as an actor and a man.
Why didn't you mention these things to the police before your mother's funeral?
There is no proof of actual guilt. They would have doubted my sanity as you are doubting it. I would have been put away, as I will be committed tomorrow, if I cannot serve the summons of death tonight.
Now, hold on a minute, Blake. Whether you're right or wrong, sane or temporarily imbalanced by the shock of your mother's death, you can't take the law into your own hands.
And we haven't come here to act as witnesses to a murder.
It will not be murder, Miss Kilburn. The sword of vengeance is not in my hands. It is in his. Go see Gregory Kane. Question him. I will join you in a few minutes.
Where are you going?
To prepare a surprise. As young Hamlet did for his stepfather's undoing. To set the stage. And let the play be the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of this king of evil. You'll find him in the music room at the head of the stairs.
Steve. What a ghastly joke is this?
It may not be a joke at all, Lorelei. I think we better go upstairs and talk to Gregory Kane. Come on.
Oh, fantastic. Even these stairs are like a stage setting.
Yes, except for the fact that an actress actually died on them only 3 days ago.
Well, it could have been accidental. They're polished marble. Elizabeth Blake could have plunged head first. The medical examiner's report said her head was crushed and her neck broken.
Yes, could have been quite a fall from here, and this top step is worn, uneven, but...
But I'm beginning not to believe it.
Well, be careful of the power of suggestion, Lorelei. Let's try to keep an open mind. That must be the door to the music room over there.
Her back would have been to that doorway as she started down the stairs, Steve.
Yes, but I think we can discount the conventional notion that Kane fooled the doctors, was actually able to walk, followed her, and pushed her downstairs. But he might have rolled his wheelchair.
Well, according to the police report, he wasn't in his wheelchair, Steve. And even young Blake said he couldn't get in and out of his armchair without help.
All right, then there's no use speculating on that angle at the moment. Let's go in and talk to Kane before young Blake starts something we can't stop.
Yes, come in.
After you, Marla.
Good evening, Mr. Kane. I'm Lorelei Kilburn, a reporter on the Illustrated Press.
Yes, I know. And your companion is Steve Wilson. Please come in and close the door.
Thanks, but how did you know my name and the fact that we were coming here?
This extension phone beside my chair keeps me well acquainted with the unbalanced activities of my unloving stepson.
And I suppose you know he suspects you of murdering his mother.
Oh, yes. And I would strongly advise you not to echo that suspicion in the columns of your newspaper, or I shall sue you for irresponsible slander, as great as the irresponsibility of poor Whittier.
Do you believe he's insane?
My dear young woman, consider the facts. Judge for yourself.
What is your version of the facts, Mr. Kane?
My dear wife, Elizabeth, Whittier's mother, suffered fainting spells. 3 nights ago, she left this room, walked out that door to the head of the stairs. I saw her sway and fall to a dead.
She left the door open?
Yes, and I could not move from this chair to help her. The servants were off for the evening, as they are tonight. I phoned her doctor. He came and pronounced her dead, and her death an accident.
And the medical examiner agreed?
Yes, and examined me and confirmed my doctor's statement that I could not have moved from this chair to help or to harm her.
I see.
Good. So nothing more need be said, and I bid you good night.
But, Mr. Kane, you know your stepson hates you. He believes that in some way you killed his mother and knows that you plan to have him committed to an asylum tomorrow.
Yes, Miss Gilborn.
Aren't you afraid of staying here alone in this house with him tonight?
No. I'm quite safe. I ask no help, no sympathy, no quarter. And I will give none.
You seem to be a very bitter man, Miss Kane.
Yes, Mr. Wilson, I am a bitter and a vengeful man.
Would you mind telling me what put an end to your theatrical career? Put you in that chair? Helpless?
I am not helpless. Any fool can walk. An ape can walk. It is the cold steel of the mind sharpened to razor's edge by adversity. That is the measure of a man's power over other men and women.
So you want power?
I have power and wealth. And from this chair I can pull the strings that makes fools dance like puppets.
No. No more. No more.
Oh, heavens, what's
that? That is Whittier, the young Hamlet, playing games.
Whose voice was that, Mr. Kane?
The voice of my late dear wife, Elizabeth, Whittier's mother.
But how?
Undoubtedly a recording of excerpts from some of her repertoire plays. She did several on the radio.
Are you quite sure?
Yes. Or would your newsman's fancy have it her ghost out of her grave and then...
Oh, infirm of purpose.
Wait a minute, Kane.
Give me the daggers. Sleeping in the dead are but as pictures. Tis the eye of childhood that fears a painted devil.
What? So funny.
The stupidity of that idiotic boy. Wasting your valuable time. Bringing you here to watch me turn pale at the sound of my dead wife's voice. Perhaps even arise from my chair in horror and betray the fact that I can walk. Confess my crime. Don't you agree, Wilson? What do you think of this?
Since you ask me, and while we're quoting, I could say, methinks you doth protest too much, Miss Kane.
Surely you don't think
that. It is now the very witching time of night.
Wait a minute, Kane.
When churchyards yawn, and hell itself breathes out contagion to this world. Now could I drink hot blood and do such business as the bitter day would quake to look on. Soft now, my mother.
The fool. He even distorts Hamlet to suit his own purpose.
What purpose, Mr. Kane?
To prove I knocked his mother down those stairs out there in the hall.
Did you say knock down the stairs?
First shove, knock. What's the difference?
It might make a great deal of difference, but that's beside the point right now.
What's the point of your staying here any longer?
To keep that boy from doing something he'll regret for the rest of his life.
Murder me?
Perhaps.
Nonsense.
Why is it nonsense? The two of you are alone in this house?
So what?
The servants are away for the night. You know the boy hates you. Believes you murdered his mother, and by your own admission you consider him unbalanced enough to be committed to an asylum.
And I shall. Tomorrow. And I will probably subpoena you and Miss Kilburn to testify as to his crazy actions tonight.
If you live that long.
I have nothing to fear from that poetic young fool. I don't propose to be frightened to death by his spooky recitation of a lot of ancient literary hogwash.
I was thinking of more modern, practical means of getting even with you, Mr. Kane.
Such as?
A club, a knife, or a gun.
Let him try.
Now hear this. Now hear
Listen
this.
To him now. He has a tape recorder in his room, probably attached to this radio.
Yes. now hear this.
In the Navy?
Yes, volunteer. It's a pity they didn't make a man of him.
Hear this. Hear this.
Craig, listen to me.
What the...
Listen to me, Craig. I found out the truth.
The truth about what, my dear?
How you were really injured and confined in that chair.
How?
Not defending me against Sander, but in a drunken brawl over another woman. In which you tried to kill another man with a heavy cane you always carry.
It's a lie, Elizabeth. It's a lie.
No! It's the truth. And I'm going to divorce you, Greg. I'll make assessments that will keep you comfortably. But I want you. I want you to get out of this house.
Listen, Wilson, Miss Kilburn, this whole thing is a bait. There never was such a quarrel. It never happened.
Well, Steve, stop him. He's smashing the radio.
It doesn't matter, Laurel. I let him smash it.
I'll smash him! I'll show him!
Yes, Kane. A remarkable demonstration of blind, senseless fury. And it has shown us a great deal.
Such as what, Wilson?
That recording of your quarrel with your wife provides an excellent motive for murder.
It never happened. It was faked.
Was your voice faked, impersonated?
No, taken from some scene I played.
What play?
What about that cane Elizabeth Blake mentioned? The one you used so effectively to smash that radio?
Let me have a look at that cane.
Keep away from me. Keep away or I'll show you what I can do with it.
There's a great deal, I imagine. It looks as if the head were loaded with lead.
It is. More ways than one. Keep away from me.
Yes. Keep away from me, Mr. Wilson, Miss Kilburn.
He's really dangerous.
What? No quotations now, you crazy young fool?
No. I think they've served their purpose. And this tape recording of your last quarrel with my mother will provide the motive for the murder. Will you take it to the police, Mr. Wilson?
Yes, gladly. Wait. Hand that here, Wick. Give it to me. Hand it here.
What's to make me give it to you?
Keep out of reach of that loaded cane, Blake.
Don't move, any of you. I told you this cane is loaded in more ways than one. It's a one-shot gun. And the first to move gets that one shot.
See, the tip of that cane is the hollow muzzle of a gun.
Yes. So I see.
Oh, don't move, Wilson. And you wait. Toss that spool of tape recording on my lap. Toss it gently. Don't show it or I'll use the one shot in this cane on you.
Thus, Steve and Lorelei and young Blake are faced with a strange dilemma. And for the surprising and exciting payoff, we'll return to Big Town in just a moment. Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner.
And the cleaner you get your skin, the surer you are of being fresh and attractive. So remember, Lifebuoy, with its purifying ingredient, gets skin cleaner. Stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. Here's what the doctors proved in 820 scientific tests.
People took daily baths with different soaps. Doctors found that Lifebuoy does more than just remove the grime and perspiration you can see. Lifebuoy's purifying ingredient makes it more effective than any other leading soap against the invisible dirt that brings on B.O.
Lifebuoy's milder, too. Safe. Even for baby's tender skin.
And you'll like the way Lifebuoy, made with costly coconut oil, bursts into quick white lather, even in hard water.
Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner. Keeps you fresh and attractive. Protects you as no other leading soap can. Bathe with Lifebuoy every day. Get the big new bath size. Buy Lifebuoy right away. Now back to Big Town and to the music room of the townhouse of a murdered actress for the payoff in Steve Wilson's strange story of the deadly summons.
Don't move, Miss Kilburn, Wilson. I've only one shot in this cane gun, but I promise it to the first one who moves toward my chair. Now toss that spool of tape recording on my lap, Whit.
You better give it to him, Blake. It's obvious he's quite desperate. Can't risk the police having proof of his motive for murdering your mother.
Even with a motive, you have no proof I murdered Elizabeth.
Stop calling my mother by that name. She's dead. You murdered her. You're trying to have me put away so you can have her money, this house, the power over other people you're always talking about.
Yes. Now give me that tape recording.
Give it to him, Blake.
All right. But I'm not finished. Here.
I think you are, Witt. Now back up. Step back while I destroy this fake evidence.
Why bother to destroy it, if it's fake?
I'll not have the finger of suspicion turned on me by that moronic young upstart.
You've created more suspicion by your actions, Mr. King.
I've done nothing but protect myself. And when I've destroyed this team...
Wait, my dear stepfather. Will all great Neptune's ocean wash this blood clean from my hand?
Stop that quoting, you crazy fool!
You better listen, Kane. I think your stepson is trying to tell you it's no use tearing up that tape recording.
Why not?
Because that isn't the tape recording I played through your radio a few minutes ago.
So it's no use destroying it or using that Kane gun on any of us.
Why not? It's killed once.
Killed once? How did it kill once? You didn't fire it at Elizabeth Blake.
You know I didn't. There was no bullet wound.
But you did use it. The Kane. Your tongue slipped and you just admitted that much.
You'll never prove it.
Perhaps not. But shall I tell you how you did it with that Kane?
Prove it.
Circumstantial evidence will prove it to the satisfaction of any judge and jury.
How? I wasn't within 15 feet of her when she fell.
Oh, but look at that radio you smashed with that murderous Kane.
What about it?
The built-in aerial was torn out. It was used for some other purpose before you smashed the radio just now.
You lie!
But look at the loop at the end of the wire. It will fit that Kane in your hand. The Kane you hurled through that open door. Struck Elizabeth Blake and knocked her down the stairs to her death.
You lie!
No, you murdered Elizabeth Blake with that Kane. You pulled it back to your chair with that aerial wire. Put the wire back in the radio and call the doctor.
So that's how he did it. I'll kill him! I'll kill him!
Keep away from him, Blake!
That's all. You meddling fool. Give me that deadly weapon, Kane. Let go of it. Did he hit you, Blake?
No, just missed me. Thanks for your grabbing his arm. You want me to help hold him?
No. I don't think that will be necessary under the circumstances. Let's take this Kane while I see that he hasn't another gun on him or in that chair.
Don't bother, Wilson. I underestimated you or I would have had another gun ready.
No, Kane. You overestimated your own ability to commit the perfect crime. All right.
Yes, Steve. You want me to phone Inspector Callahan of Homicide?
Yes, then Fletch on City Desk and byline yourself a story of a deadly summons. Signed, sealed, and delivered to one Gregory Kane. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight you've heard the dramatization of an unusual crime from the front pages of the Big Town Illustrated Press. It was but one of the hundreds of so-called perfect crimes which failed. Not so much because of the brilliance of the police or of private investigators, but because all criminals are their own worst enemies and usually betray themselves.
And that's especially true next week, when you'll hear the headline story of the chill of death.
Yes, Lorelei, but right now I see that Mickey, one of my cub reporters, is here with something on his mind.
Pardon me, Mr. Wilson.
Yes, Mickey.
Mr. Wilson, have you actually seen that report about Lifebuoy Health Soap?
Indeed I have, Mickey. It's a remarkable document. It explains why the doctors know that a daily Lifebuoy bath does get skin cleaner. Does keep you fresh and attractive. Protects you when other soaps fail. And Mickey...
Yes, Mr. Wilson?
Here's the proof of the pudding. Lifebuoy is used in the homes of 40 million Americans.
In tonight's dramatization, all names, times, and places are fictional. Big Town features Edward Pauley as Steve Wilson, Fran Carlin as Lorelei Kilburn, and is written and produced by Jerry McGill. Friends, you can help make this Easter season a time of hope for crippled children by buying Easter Seals. For Easter Seals provide the special services these children need to learn to walk again, talk again, lead useful, active lives. Be generous when you buy your Easter Seals this year.
Lever Brothers Company has amazing news. New 1950 Rinso with sodium. It's here a year ahead of time. New 1950 Rinso has three times the whiter washing action of any other soap. The sensational new washing action of 1950 Rinso gets white clothes whiter than new, washable colors brighter than new, and keeps them whiter, brighter than any other soap. Rinso is so safe for clothes, so kind to hands. Get new 1950 Rinso at your dealers now.
Be sure and be with us again next Tuesday at the same time when Lever Brothers Company will again present Big Town. This is your narrator, Dwight Weiss, bidding you good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The NBC Theater presents
Screen Directors Guild Assignment, production, The Exile. Director, Max Opels. Star, Douglas Fairbanks, Jr.
This is the Screen Directors Guild presentation of the adventurous legend, The Exile, starring Douglas Fairbanks and introducing the director of the film, Max Opels. The statement that art acknowledges no national boundaries is particularly true of the motion picture medium. Thus it is with a great deal of pleasure that the NBC Theater welcomes tonight a director who received his film education in Germany and France. In him is exemplified the rare combination of talents which are the starting point of the screen director's art. Among his American motion pictures are Letter from an Unknown Woman, the soon-to-be-released production Caught, and of course tonight's story, The Exile. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Max Opels.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very pleased and flattered that tonight the Screen Directors Guild presents The Exile, with Douglas Fairbanks Jr. in the screen role of Charles II and Jeanette Waldo as Kay. For many years, I have had an idea about how history should be presented in the dramatic form, and The Exile is that idea come to life. For me, over centuries, parts of history take on the flavor of an old ballad, singing the deeds of brave men who lived in a kind of fairyland. But if such a quality is to be placed upon the screen, it requires a special sort of actor. He must possess a certain flair, a certain something I can call only Fairbanksism. Fairbanksism is a very vital substance in movie making, kind of glorious energy which escapes from most of us when we lose the dreams of childhood. Well, fortunately for this idea, Douglas Fairbanks came to me one day and he said,
Max, I want you to direct a picture for me. Listen. I'll tell you the story. The story begins on a stormy night in the year of our Lord, 1660. It's night, a storm with thunder and lightning, a slashing downpour of rain, and a horseman. A horseman fleeing across Holland in the middle of the 17th century. The fate not only of a nation is riding tonight, but of a way of life. A horseman riding the whole fugitive night. And the name of that horseman, Charles II. Exiled King of England. In the bright morning, the exiled king is at his ease, pretending to sleep on the bank of a Dutch canal. Pretending to sleep because an enemy, a mounted man in a black cloak and a round hat, with ascetic, suspicious eyes, is riding slowly toward him. Stops without dismounting.
You! Peasant.
Hmm? Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Greetings in God's grace.
Greetings. Greetings.
And have you seen aught of a man about 2 yards high with black hair and impudent manner?
Excuse me, but I am a stranger here, far from home, and enjoying the hospitality of these Netherlands.
English?
Indeed.
Far from home? For what reason?
My health.
God heal you, sir. And have you seen aught of the fugitive English King Charles Stuart, banished from England and hiding here?
What? That scoundrel among men? That lazy, self-indulgent wastrel of... Imagine England in the hands of a man like that, eh?
Not if Cromwell's men discover him. You have not seen him?
Is he about?
We found his horse wandering exhausted in a wood.
Knave, tyrant, tormentor of dumb beasts. I'll speed you on your search, sir. And may you and Charles II come face to face one day not far off.
We shall. Farewell. Farewell. Health and long life, countrymen.
My thanks, countrymen. My thanks. I must be on the move. But where? Where?
You there on the bank.
Oh. Ahoy, canal boat.
Can you help me? I can't keep this barge in midstream.
Keep it headed straight. I'll jump aboard from the bridge.
Well, hurry.
Plenty of time now, lass. Plenty of time. Now, steady as you go. Steady.
I'm trying.
All right. Now. Quick, hand me the pole.
Here.
Good.
Hold it against your shoulder.
I see.
And push.
I have it now.
Oh, that's so much better. Jan would have been furious if I had grounded his barge.
Jan? Who's Jan?
He owns the boat. He lets me use it if I haul his cargo.
Is he your master?
My cousin.
Healthy?
Very.
Muscular?
A huge man.
And he lets you do his heavy work, does he?
He owns the farm next to mine, and he owns the debts on my farm and my inn. 3,000 guilders I owe Jan.
You have a farm and an inn, eh?
Ever since my father died.
Tell me, this farm and inn of yours, is it close?
Not yet. I must anchor another night.
Good.
Why?
I find leisurely travel sometime very soothing. And you need help with this barge and swollen waters, don't you?
Yes.
Good, good. Well, I come from a seafaring nation. Consider me your crew. How sweet the moonlight sleeps upon that bank. Here will we sit and let the sounds of music creep in our ears.
How pretty. What is it?
William Shakespeare, a poet who had his day, 50 years ago. Soon forgotten, but while he sang right beautifully.
Oh. Charles.
Hmm?
I was just trying the name.
Try it again.
Charles.
Again.
Was not your English king named
Scottish,
Charles?
Scottish king. Oh. Charles Stuart, and a Scot.
They say he was a most scandalous man.
A little rakish at times, but not too bad.
They say it is dangerous for an Englishman to side with the exiled king in these times.
Well, it's a little inconvenient at times, yes. That is why I wonder, Mistress Katie, if I could hide with you for a while.
How?
Why, I could work on your farm and at the inn. I should ask nothing in return but shelter and board. Now tell me, how would you say, could you use an extra man in Dutch?
Kunt u een extra man gebruiken?
Kun u een extra man
gebruiken?
Well, could you?
Yes.
Good. Good.
How sweet the moonlight sleeps upon that bank. It is very lovely.
You are lovely.
Are you sure he will be soon forgotten, this Willem Shakespeare, if he says such true and lovely things?
For weeks, the exiled king works at Katie's farm and inn, willingly, even gladly, performing the most menial labor. Only his cavalier friends in The Hague have been told of his new hideout. And now, one day again, history rides the Dutch lowlands.
Your Majesty! Your Majesty!
Hyde, old friend!
I have news from England.
Come. Hyde, you might have been followed here.
Aye, but the news warrants great risks.
Oh?
Your Majesty, General Monk has declared for us.
General Monk? on our side.
Even now, his army marches against the Roundheads. England is split into more factions than ever. And General Monk thinks the country would rally to your side if you returned now.
Return? Now?
At once, Your Majesty.
I'm sorry, Hyde. No.
But with Monk on our side now, how can we fail?
I said no, Hyde.
These men are hungry. They yearn for home and family.
I know.
10 long years in exile,
I know
Majesty.
That, too. Bitterly enough.
Is this a time to show hesitation and fear and doubt?
Fear? Who speaks of fear? Great heaven, man, for 2 years after Cromwell killed the king, my father, I fought and met defeat, wasting the blood of men who trusted in me. And all because our hopes were false. False! I was told the 3 kingdoms would rise behind me to a man until I faced the enemy. I was left alone with a handful of men. Brave men, but beaten beforehand and doomed in advance by false, false hopes. False hopes, false starts, false promises. And always the blood of free men uselessly forfeit. Now, I'll go home, Hyde, when I am freely called by all my countrymen. And not before.
The men are ready now. They call you leader, king.
King. What good's a king who's only king to some?
So be it, sire. There is other news, not quite so favorable. Colonel Ingram is in Holland.
Ingram? Here? That is evil news.
If there is one man in Christendom I fear above another, that man is the executioner Ingram.
Oh. Describe the man to me so I'll know him if we meet.
Think of the face and habit of death, and that is Ingram. His skin is parched and yellow like a dead man's. His lips are a straight white gash across his face, and his eyes burn with a light like grave worms in their bony sockets.
A consecrated
man. A fanatic, fearing nothing.
Naturally, what is death himself to fear?
Charles, if you will not return to England, then flee.
Flee Ingram? I think not, Hyde.
No, otherwise the cause is lost, Your Majesty.
Flee where? Holland is overrun with Cromwell's spies and swordsmen. Besides...
Charles! Charles, where are you?
Besides, I like it here. In spite of England.
You are listening to the Screen Directors Guild production of The Exile, starring Douglas Fairbanks. And introducing the director of the film, Max Opels.
Two more weeks of idyllic pastoral life on Katie's farm. Then one afternoon, Charles is fishing in the canal, for if a cat may look at a king, then a king may look for a catfish. Unheard by him, a figure dressed in tarnished regal clothing moves up behind him, leading a moth-eaten horse.
Are you a Hollander?
Huh?
A Dutchman?
Huh? Oh, good day, sir, good day, good day.
I'm told there is an inn hereabouts.
An excellent inn, my lord, I know, for I work there.
Ah, but you're English.
True.
What is your capacity at the inn?
I have been promoted to overseer.
Excellent. A fellow exile and an overseer. Tell me, what costs bed and board to a fellow countryman, you know?
2 guilders a night.
2 guilders. Hmm. Suppose I tell you in all confidence that when I have spent the night at your inn, you may charge the next guest 20 guilders without protest, for you may tell him honestly, a king slept in this inn. Eh?
King? Which king?
Look at me. And though these English garments be the worse for hardship, and though my lineaments be weathered and war-beaten, say, if you can, that you do not recognize your king, Englishman. Not
Charles Stuart.
And the wandering exiled Stuart. Yes.
Oh, sire.
Arise and lead me to your inn. You and your employer shall be rewarded handsomely someday.
Now.
Charles. Did you finally get His Majesty, our guest, to sleep?
Finally, yes.
He is very indiscreet for a fugitive, Charles.
Very indiscreet.
Letting all those strangers in the tap room know who he is, but swearing us to secrecy.
I tell you, he'll bring Cromwell's roundheads down on us looking for him.
Charles, he worries me. He told me he wants you with him when he invades England again.
Oh? And when may this be?
He said soon.
Uh-huh.
It's all so stupid and wasteful. There are far better things to do than quarrel over politics and kingdoms and all that rubbish.
Ah, we disagree there, Katie. England is a nation of some 7 million people who depend on their leaders. We owe them some sort of debt of...
Debt nonsense. You men will always find some excuse to start fighting and to be very proper about it. Debt indeed. Now, I have a debt. A real one that you can count and that means something to plain people. 3,000 guilders.
I know.
I gave you a job and shelter when you wanted it, and now you plan to leave me for that beer head.
If my king calls me, Katie,
you will desert me.
I will follow my call.
Then I will not need your services any longer, Charles.
I'm dismissed?
Yes.
Now?
I will not spend my time and my money teaching you farming and management of an inn and see it all go to waste over politics. It is best you leave before...
Before what?
Before I come to depend on you too much.
I understand. I'll leave in the morning. Good night, Mistress Katie.
Come in, please.
Ingram.
The face in the habit of death, and that is Ingram. Like a dead man's, his mouth a straight white gash across his face, and that is Ingram.
Ingram.
Do you work at this inn?
Yes.
English?
Yes.
I've seen you before, somewhere.
It may be.
Tell me plainly, of which party are you?
Party?
The parliamentary party.
You mean the roundheads?
Do you call them so?
Candidly, sir, if I ever see my home again, I shall belong to no party. I have recently renounced politics.
Then perhaps I can trust a man without any convictions.
I suppose that depends on the trust.
I am looking for a man whose face I have not seen in many years. Rumor places him hereabout. His name is Charles Stuart.
You refer to the king?
We call him Charles Stuart.
What? Who down there takes the name of his sovereign, Charles II of England?
The fool, the pompous idiot.
And what is this? A despised roundhead in the royal presence? Bear your head. Bear your head, I say.
I remove my hat only in the presence of God and in the presence of death.
Sire, this gentleman here is looking for an uncrowned king. The gentleman's name is Ingram.
The executioner?
Your servant, sire.
I'll retire to my room.
Wait.
I'm tired.
You shall sleep. Soundly.
Oh, no, no, no.
Draw your sword.
No, no, no. Please, I'm not really the king. I'm not the king. I'm an actor. Dick Pinner. Pinner's my name.
Draw your sword.
But I'm just an actor. A poor, out-of-work actor. Believe me, please, believe me.
Enough, Ingram. The jest is over.
What jest?
Oh, can't you tell a knave from a king? Look at me, Ingram. Look at me. Spare this craven fool clowning for his keep and look at me. Surely you know a Stuart when you see one. Look at me.
Be sure. Stuart. To be sure.
Pinner, slide me your sword, quick. Thanks. Ah, see how it is to deal with an armed Stuart for a change.
Charles Stuart, I charge you to surrender.
Listen,
you are trapped, Stuart. My men surround the inn.
In my service at this inn, I learned a famous recipe for rabbit pie. It goes like this. First, catch the rabbit.
And keep a firm grip on your sword. Remember it, Ingram. Long live the king!
Robbins, Thurlow, all of you! Colonel Ingram, after him, men, dead or alive!
Oh!
Ricky Robbins.
Who are you? What is the meaning of this?
You are the mistress of this inn.
But what if I am?
Where is he?
Who?
The Englishman who works here.
If you mean Charles, my retainer...
Where is he?
What right have you to invade a Dutch house and hound a hard-working man to death because he is loyal to his king?
Don't play the fool with me. He is the king.
Charles? The king?
It's plain you're innocent in that matter. But mind you, don't shield the man if you would remain innocent in the matter.
What now, Colonel Ingram?
It's plain from her manner that Stuart's more than handyman to her. Watch her. She'll lead us to him.
Katie, you shouldn't have come here. They'll not omit to search around this windmill.
Charles, that man with the face like a skull, he told me who you are.
Then let me tell you in a few moments what I wanted to spend my life telling you. I love you, Katie. Above all things, deeply and gratefully.
Gratefully? Why?
Because in your love, I've found a few precious moments of shelter. I've learned from you another life than fear and flight and battlefields and parliaments. If I should die, remember that I loved you. Not as King Charles, doubtful monarch of a restless realm, but as Charles, master of his own soul.
Charles, look, they're coming.
I knew it. Quick, inside the mill. Here. Against this wall. Hide behind these sacks.
Here, of course. Guard the door. Thurlow around the back. I'll meet the steward single-handed.
He's coming in alone.
God be with you, Charles.
Charles Stuart. Stuart, how will you die? I give you this chance to face me alone, for I would relish killing you with my own blade. Stuart!
I am here. Defend yourself, killer.
Rejoice, O England. Thy deliverance is at hand.
Oh, well spoken, sir. You write your own epitaph.
We'll finish this alone. You and I.
You'll die for that vanity.
I'll live for my belief.
And I for mine. Back, Inquisitor. What? You give ground to a steward? Back, I say, back.
Rusty.
Rust, Ingram, is the color of old blood. Your crimes are upon you, killer. Back! Up the stairs!
Blasphemer!
Back!
Heretic!
Back, I say! Up!
Ungodly stewards!
Why? Because I think God made men free?
Die!
Another time, Ingram. Not just now. Die!
You must die if England is to live.
Rot. England will live no matter what happens to either of us. On guard! Killer! It's over, Katie.
Thank heaven. Charles, listen. Outside.
There's trouble. And surely roundheads do not make trouble for other roundheads.
Your Majesty! Your Majesty!
Hyde! How? What?
Are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right.
Oh, thank God you're safe. I bring great news, great news.
Oh?
A new free parliament has, on behalf of all the people and all beliefs, asked you to return to England as their king.
Religious freedom for all and all the rest?
Everything.
Oh. Will you leave me alone with Katie for a moment?
Your Majesty.
Katie.
I know, Charles.
What shall I do?
What your heart tells you, Your Majesty.
Charles, no, Charles.
Your Majesty. You are my Charles, but you're their king. And they are so many, and I am one.
But if that one is all...
Your people are hurt. There are many wounds for you to tend.
But what will happen to you?
I will have many things to do. I'm going to plant more tulips in the west field bordering the road, and my inn will be famous now. And I shall pay my debts.
Katie.
And my memories will be my greatest fortune.
And mine. And all these memories I'll put like rose leaves in a box. And I shall love you always, beyond measure, beyond proof, beyond battle and the folly of nations, beyond life, where we shall meet again.
Charles, England is at the door.
Coming. Goodbye, Katie. One kiss.
To last forever.
Coming. Coming.
Gentlemen, the king.
And I shall love you always, beyond measure, beyond proof, beyond battle and the folly of nations, beyond life, where we shall meet again.
The NBC Theater has presented the Screen Directors Guild production of The Exile, starring Douglas Fairbanks with Janet Waldo, and introducing the director of the film, Max Opels. Next week, the NBC Theater brings you the world-famous screen director, Alfred Hitchcock, introducing the delightful comedy, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, with Robert Montgomery in the starring role. And now, here again are tonight's stars, Douglas Fairbanks and Janet Waldo, and screen director, Max Opels.
Doug, this has been the way you told me the story?
Yes, yes, and you said you'd direct the picture.
It must have been quite an experience for two such talented artists as yourselves to work together.
Yes, there's one of Mr. Fairbanks' accomplishments I shall never forget.
His acting?
Sure, and his practical jokes.
Why, Max, how can you say such a thing?
Well, one day I had a birthday and they bring me such a beautiful cake on the set. But when I tried to cut it, a disaster.
Why?
It was made out of wood. Very embarrassing. But when Doc brought out a real cake, then we had a nice party.
Well, you see, we really loved you after all, Max.
So nice. But for your practical jokes, I forgave you when I saw your latest picture, The Fighting O'Flynn.
Did you like it, Max? I'm very glad. It's to be released next month, you know.
Yeah, I liked it very much. Miss Waldo, it's about a dashing, romantic Irishman who does the most amazing things you have ever seen just to win the lady he loves.
It sounds wonderful. Mr. Fairbanks, I understand that besides starring in The Fighting O'Flynn, you also wrote it and produced it.
Well, yes, that's right. But I hope you enjoy it too, Janet. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
And good night to you, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., Janet Waldo, and Max Opels. Tonight's cast included Raymond Burr, Carl Harvard, Paul McVeigh, Joe Grandy, and Lou Krugman. The Exile was adapted for radio by Milton Geiger, and original music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. Production was under the supervision of Howard Wiley, your announcer, Frank Barton. The Exile was presented through the courtesy of the Fairbanks Company and of Universal International Pictures, now releasing Crisscross, starring Burt Lancaster, Yvonne DiCarlo, and Dan Duryea. Listen again next week when the NBC Theater presents
Screen Directors Guild Assignment, production Mr. and Mrs. Smith, director Alfred Hitchcock, star Robert Montgomery.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. If you want to hear more from the Screen Directors Playhouse, Big Town, Relic Radio Show, or find all the other podcasts, just visit RelicRadio.com. You'll find everything linked to right on the front page. Also a Shoutcast stream there and a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.